Say hello now to another one of our contributors in County Wicklow. It's Eric Dempsey.
Hello, Derek. Welcome to County Wicklow. I'm in my garden in County Wicklow, about 3 kilometres south of Newcastle and about 1.5 kilometres from the East Coast Nature Reserve. And we're looking forward to what will unfold in about 2.5 to 3 hours' time. We are hoping that we will have a yellowhammer singing. There's one holding territory in the hedgerows just to the back of our garden. And also, we have a stock dove which has been singing most evenings and most mornings for the last week or two. And I think if we get stock dove singing, Derek, I wonder, would that be a first for our dawn chorus? So fingers crossed we get a whole selection of birds from our garden here in County Wicklow.
Well, to the best of my knowledge, and in the 26 years we've been doing this programme, I don't think, Eric, we've ever had a stock dove. I'm actually not sure what a stock dove even looks like, to be honest.
They're like a smaller version of a wood pigeon, but without that white patch on the neck. And they've got two beautiful black bars on the wings. They're quite a scarce bird. They like arable farmlands, and there's lots of arable farmland around where I'm living at the moment. They have a cooing sound, but it's a very different sound to that of wood pigeon or collared doves. It's a beautiful song. So I have my fingers crossed, Derek, that our stock dove will deliver later on this morning.
Wouldn't that be just lovely? Thank you, Eric. Just to remind you, later on this morning, we'll be hearing live bird song from Scotland, Wales, the Isle of Man, Brittany, Cornwall, all over Ireland, from our contributors and you, our listeners. We want to hear your bird sing. So we'll be asking you to get your phone ready. I'm going to give you a WhatsApp number now, and then we'll give it to you a little bit later on also when we speak with our researcher, John Bella Riley. The number is 00353 87 708 7031. 00353 87 708 7031. And we want you to store that number into your WhatsApp contacts, okay? It's really straightforward. And then when the bird starts singing where you are, just simply go outside or stick it out the bedroom window and say, hello, my name is, for example, Derek Mooney, and here I am in Kilmacud in Dublin 14, and here are the birds singing where I am. Have a listen. And then we listen to the birds. You press record, and you record for about 45 seconds. And as soon as you take your thumb or finger off the record button, when you release it, it will send that recording directly to us here in RTE. And hopefully between 4 and 7 a.m., when the birds are singing live and we're live from Kuskinny Marsh, we'll be able to play your dawn chorus where you are. Now, isn't that fantastic? Let's move on with our second documentary of the morning. And this one is about the common eider. In it, we explore the world of these colourful and charismatic ducks. For those of you too young to remember, or indeed those of you who have repressed the memories, Frankie Howard was a popular English actor and comedian, noted for his, let's say, unusual vocal exclamations. They say that there's nothing really new in comedy. As often happens, the natural world got there first. I've no idea where Frankie took the inspiration from, but if perhaps he just happened to be a bird watcher and had encountered a certain seabird at close quarters, well, judge for yourselves. This is the mating call of the male common eider. A large duck that makes its home in and around the coastlines of the North Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. And for my money, one of the oddest sounds in nature. They sound as if they've just heard a particularly juicy piece of gossip. The common eider is the largest duck in the Northern Hemisphere. It is perfectly adapted for life in cold seawater, and they nest along the coastline of northern parts of North America, Eastern Asia, and Europe, including Ireland. The male eider, or the drake, that's calling now, is a very striking bird indeed. His body is largely white, with a contrasting black belly, sides, and rear end, and with a delicate salmon pink wash on his chest. He has a black cap on his head, along with a very sloped, yellowish, Roman nose-style beak. Most striking of all, though, are the patches of pastel lime green on the sides and rear of his neck. More on which anon. The female, as with most female ducks, is altogether more drab in appearance, being a mottled brown colour all over. Her brown feathers provide vital camouflage when she is incubating her eggs, helping her to blend in with the natural surroundings and avoid detection by predators. The male eider, as is the case with most duck species, plays no role in incubation or childcare, and so can afford to look as flashy and conspicuous as he likes.
People often ask me what my favourite bird is, and honestly, it's a really difficult question to answer. But certainly the eider is well up there. It's definitely one of my favourite birds of all time. I've been watching birds ever since I was a very small child, and I still never get tired of seeing eiders. They're remarkable.
Niall Hatch is Public Relations, Branches and Development Officer with Birdwatch Ireland.
The male is just such a freakish but also beautiful looking creature. They have this lime green on the back of their heads, this lovely black and white pattern on the body, this strange sloping beak. They look almost alien in some ways, but also like really pretty. So I really, really like that about them. The females too, they're much more camouflaged, but when you see them up close, their plumage is actually really stunning. It just all sorts of different waves and lines in it. It's a real marvel of natural selection, perfectly designed to camouflage her when she's incubating her eggs. And that's something that I find really fascinating as well. It's rare, of course, that you get to see an eider up close, because usually when you spot them, they're just like corks bobbing on the ocean. You see them at a long, long distance. So a lot of bird watchers are actually surprised if they do see one up close at just how large they are. They're a very big bird. They're in fact, the largest duck in the whole northern hemisphere. So a substantial bird, much bigger than the familiar mallard that people will know. And the other thing about them is, too, they're incredibly fast in flight. They actually are the second fastest European bird in level flight. The fastest is another type of duck called the red-breasted merganser. But the eider can still clock in at, I think it's around 116 kilometres an hour in level flight. So if you think about that, that's almost the speed limit on an Irish motorway. So it shows you just what they're capable of. So that's something quite remarkable about them, too. And you wouldn't expect something that looks so cumbersome and so well-evolved for life in the water to be able to fly quite so quickly. Because certainly on land, they are indeed very awkward, and they really don't like walking on land. The female has to lay her eggs on land, and they do come ashore occasionally, both sexes do, but they much prefer to be in the water. And that's because there are fewer predators out there, but also because their favourite food is found there as well. They love to eat things like mussels and cockles that they find down at the bottom of the seabed. So what they do is they dive down very, very deep, often in a big group together. You'll see the whole flock diving at the same time. And they scoop these up with this remarkable sort of elongated beak that they have. And very often they'll swallow them whole rather than try to open them, as other birds will do. So they can get through quite a lot of them. And that beak shape is designed to help pry them up off the bottom of the ocean. So that's why they look the way that they do. There are three other species of eider in the world, and they also look quite remarkable. They're closely related to our common eider. It's a very close-knit group. You have the king eider, which we see occasionally in Ireland as a rare vagrant. There's usually a couple of records each year. The male king eider is an outlandish-looking creature. It's almost like a Picasso painting of a bird. It has these big sails on the back of its wings. In the water, they really look like sails on a sailing ship. It has this big yellow patch on the base of its beak, a really strange-looking head shape. So it's a really bizarre looking bird, but pretty at the same time. Then there is Steller's eider, which is a rare and declining species that breeds mainly in northern Russia. It's quite small for an eider. It's not a very big duck. And you really just get them in parts of Norway and Estonia, Finland, that kind of area in the winter, and the numbers are declining. Like our eider, it has green on the back of the head, but quite a different head shape, and the body is darker. And then finally you have the spectacled eider, which is found really only in the North Pacific Ocean, sort of between Russia and Alaska, that kind of area. They breed in both those areas too. And they, in the winter, most of the population gathers together in a huge big raft that floats around in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And they have these solid green heads, and it looks like they're wearing a pair of pilot's goggles on their heads. They look really, really strange. So there is something about the way that eider have evolved as a whole group, that they are quite weird looking birds, but still very attractive at the same time.
Derek, you
yes,
made it!
Erla, I made it. How are you? It's very windy today.
It is. It's very windy. That's the reason we couldn't go by boat to our island.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that shortly. Well, here we are in Stykkisholmur.
Yes, we are here in Stykkisholmur. And this is actually the Eider Center of Iceland our family is running.
It's May 2019. I've traveled to Stykkisholmur on the west coast of Iceland. I've come here to visit an eider nesting colony. Although I've seen flocks of eider far offshore in Ireland, they were very little more than specks on the horizon. I've never actually seen the species up close before, nor have I ever been so near to what happens to be one of the most expensive commercially harvested materials in the world, eider down.
I'm taking now Derek to the islands. We are walking across to Landey. We can walk now because the tide is very low, so we can cross the shore. And we are going to Landey, which belongs to Stykkisholmur, the Stykkisholmur town. And we will find some eiders over there. It's too windy to go to our island, so we have to walk to the nearest islands from this town. And this island is called Landey, which means land island.
My guide is Erla Fredriksdóttir, CEO of a family-run operation which cleans eiderdown from farmers all around Iceland, as well as producing its own products for the domestic and international market.
Derek, come over here. There's one nest here. Be careful when you're walking over.
Have you got one?
Yeah, I got one. And be careful when you walk over.
Okay, okay. Oh, this is fantastic. Wow, they're absolute 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 eggs, as you said there. They really are beautiful. They're big, aren't they? They really are big. They're kind of an olive green colour.
Yeah, right. They're quite big and covered with all the warm down, eider down.
Oh, the down just looks amazing. Look at how perfectly positioned that down is around there. Kind of like a crown on a queen's head or something like that.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, it fits it absolutely perfectly.
It does.
Now, I won't touch it, obviously, because I don't want to interfere with the nest in any way at all. So the female has just gone off. This could be one of those moments when she's popped off the nest to get a drink of water or whatever the case may be, as you were saying. But it really is terrific. The effort that goes into creating this nest and then plucking out the feathers and then just laying them down like this. Talk to me about the history of it in this part of the world, though, in Iceland, of actually harvesting the down.
Yeah, since Iceland was settled, I believe the eider down has been harvested. At least since 1847, the eider duck has been protected bird in Iceland only because of the eider down. And people in Iceland have, through the years, collected and harvested the eider down.
Yeah. There are very few places in the world where people do this. Norway, the very north of Norway, is another place. Do you think the Norwegians had an influence here?
I think so. I think when the Norwegian Vikings moved to Iceland around 900, they brought the knowledge about the eider duck and they knew how to harvest it down and use it. And I think they started it here as they did in Norway. That's at least that's what I believe.
And what are the punishments if you interfere with the nest or actually interfere with the bird itself?
Actually not any punishment, but nobody does harm the bird. The farmers are allowed to have, in the old days, they could have one egg from each nest. If there were many eggs in the nest, they can have for themselves maybe one egg. But nowadays, nobody does that. We have so many things else to eat. But in the old days, it was very important.
So the population of eider duck must be doing very well in Iceland, is it?
Yeah, it has been about the same through the years.
Do you have any idea on numbers?
There are about 400,000 birds in Iceland.
Right around the coast. And are they found mainly on the west coast or is it the entire country itself?
It's all around Iceland except the south beach where we have sandy beach. The eider duck needs seaweed because she does not feed her ducklings in the nest. Right after they are dry, about 24 hours after they are born, she takes them to the shore to have something to eat. And the food lives in the seaweed, the ducklings eat. They eat the small things they find, like scallops and maybe fish eggs, and all the small things that live in the seaweed. So she needs the seaweed to nest. It's only because of to be able to feed the ducklings.
Why do you like this bird so much?
just because I grew up with it. When I was a small kid, I used to go with my family to collect eiderdown. Every summer, I went to our islands and we took care of the eiders and harvested it down.
I can actually hear them calling in the background now, that kind of goo, the goo sound.
Yeah, they are very special.
Have you got a name for that here in Iceland, that sound?
Yeah, we actually do. It's called that the eider ducks are ooa. Ooa. The sound from them,
okay.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, that's exactly what it sounds like. Two nosy neighbours talking over a fence in their garden, having a chat.
Ooh.
Oh, it's really magnificent to see them here, where they belong, and not just see video images of them or still photographs of them. This is a real treat for me, I have to say. It's an extraordinary place to be. Tell me a little bit about this island.
We can walk. We did walk, because now the tide is very low, so we are able to walk from the town across the shore and to this island. And we have many, many species of birds here, like the tern, the birds you mentioned before.
Oyster catcher.
You're right.
I saw some ravens.
Yeah, and some seagulls. And the seagulls and ravens are predators for the eiders. They eat their eggs and can also eat the ducklings. But in these islands, and in some islands, they like to live in perfect harmony. They actually do. And we have seen eider duck nesting right behind a seagull nest. And the seagull, he just leaves her alone. He does not attack her, not his neighbor.
Well, yeah. We can see them out there. We can see the males and the females.
Yeah, right.
And so close to the shore too. It really is terrific. Thank you for showing me this. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Eider ducks live for 20 to 25 years and return to the same nesting grounds year after year. It is the female eider alone who produces the famed eiderdown. Each adult female only produces approximately 16 grams of it during the breeding season. When building her nest, she plucks this pre-loosened down from her breast and uses it to create a soft and extremely well-insulated lining for her precious eggs. But it's not just her eggs that are precious. Eider down commands such high prices because it is so scarce a commodity. Eider ducks cannot be farmed or raised in captivity just to ensure a supply of their soft down feathers. So all of the world's eider down must come from wild sources. It is said that each year, more Rolls-Royce cars are produced than eiderdown quilts.
Welcome to King Eider. This is our factory where we process the eiderdown, where all the magic happens.
Oh, yes. Whoops, I'm falling over a bank of it. Yeah. Wow.
We have 5 sacks already, the first collection of this season. And when we receive the eiderdown, it's filled with all kinds of natural things, like grass, seaweed, moss, trees, sand, and unfortunately also everything that comes from the sea, like remainings of fisherman's net and something plastic. And we have to clean all this out of the eider down, and actually the weight of the down, as it's like this, with all the natural things included, the weight of only the eider down is about 20%.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and the grass and all the natural
spurious materials weigh a lot more, the other 80%.
Right.
So you think you've got a lot of gold here, and then when you clean it up, you realize you've less gold than you started with.
Right.
So, I mean, you say this is your factory. This is it's a large room,
yes.
And there's quite a lot of machinery in here, but there are no people.
Not yet. We will start the factory for this season in next week.
All of the eiderdown that's here in these sacks, some bigger than others, is that all from your islands or is it from all around Iceland?
It's all around Iceland. There are about 400 eider farmers and we buy eider down from maybe 150 up to 200 of them.
And typically how much would one farmer be selling to you?
It's very different. Some farmers maybe few hundred grams or few kilos. Some farmers 20 kilos or 30 kilos. Or maybe the biggest one who are very few. About 50.
It doesn't seem like a lot.
No.
My body weight is 92 kilos.
Right. No, it's not a lot. But
so how much is produced every year from Iceland?
From Iceland, it's produced 3,000 kilos a year.
Doesn't seem like an awful lot. And are you one of the biggest producers or the biggest producer?
Yeah, we are the biggest producer. We produce about 1,000 kilo up to 1,200 every year.
And can I be so crude as to ask, is it a good investment? Is it a good business? Are you making a lot of money? Because certainly when it gets to the consumer, they're very expensive. I've been checking around and you can pay anything up to 20,000 euro for a king-sized eiderdown quilt of the finest quality.
Yeah, I have not been rich of doing this business, but I last 10 years I have made my living out of it. It's a lot of work to collect eiderdown or harvest the eiderdown. You have to protect the eiderduck, and some farmers has to begin in mid-April to protect the eiderducks from the predators.
So how do they protect them from the predators?
They make some fences. Some of them make some fences. They make some bells, some noise.
So if you're making fences, you're keeping out the likes of foxes?
Foxes and minks. Farmers use all kinds of ways.
But how can you protect the eggs from seagulls, for example?
It's very difficult to do it. We are allowed to kill the predators, and some farmers do.
And can I ask, were they ever eaten, the duck itself?
It happens because the eiderduck is a diver, and sometimes it happens to dive into fishermen's nets. And because it's protected and forbidden to eat, but people did not want to throw it away when it was diving in the net, so they brought it to land in a bag. And it was called not eiderduck, bag duck.
Bag duck.
Like in a bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, bag duck. So, and then it's eaten, but it's not shot or killed just to eat it.
So it wouldn't be sold on the market?
No, never.
No, so just the family, if it happened to get caught in the net, they wouldn't waste the food.
Right.
It would be recycled through the human food chain on this occasion.
Exactly.
So it all arrives in like this in big sacks, and it has all sorts of bits and pieces in it, apart from just the down itself. What do you do?
The first step is we put the eiderdown in this oven, and we heat the eiderdown up to 120 degrees for at least 8 hours. When it's very dry, the down is very dry and all the grass and seaweed and all kinds of natural things are very dry, it's easy to beat the dirt out of the eiderdown.
And presumably that kills all the bacteria in there as well.
Sure, it does, We have machine that the function is like the down is beaten. This spins also very fast, and we have a net. And inside is a spinner that spins in different speed as the outside, that pushes the eiderdown to the net, and the feathers like sticks out of the net, and we have a rubber that like grips the eider feathers out of the eiderdown.
So then you're just left with pure eiderdown. So the eider feathers are gone.
Not yet.
Okay.
We have to go to another room.
Where somebody actually goes through them with a magnifying glass and a pair of tweezers, perhaps? No.
And inside here, this is the main work done here. Here we have people usually sitting, hand-picking the
feathers. Oh, literally,
feather.
They are. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right.
Hand-picking the feathers that the machine, and the remaining dust that the machine cannot pick. We have not found the machine yet.
That can do that.
Yeah, that can replace the human hand.
Okay, so here you've got baskets of presumably eiderdown. Well, it looks exactly like eiderdown. I know what it looks like. And it's an extraordinary material. No weight in it at all.
Yeah, right. And
yet, this material has been stored for hundreds of years.
Right.
So how does it keep us warm?
The eiderdown, it sticks together. It's different from all the kind of down. When you take it, you can take a bunch of it and it sticks together. If you blow your nose in front of it, it will just stay. It will not go all around as all the kind of like goose or duck down. And it has very high insulation power.
Well, it needs to for the eiderduck, considering where it lives.
Right, because during the winter time, the eiderduck lives in the North Sea. It's very cold outside the sea. It's cold on land. You can imagine how cold it can be during winter time around Iceland. And she has to be very warmly dressed. So she has the eiderdown to keep her body warm. And she has to be very warm also because she has to gain weight before the nesting season. She has to gain weight because she does not eat anything during the 26 days when she is incubating the eggs.
Yes.
She does not eat anything. She only goes once a day from the nest to have something to drink. So she has to be very well prepared for that season. So she has to be very warm during that time and eat a lot and gain weight.
So when she lays the eggs, does she lay the eggs all together over the course of one day, or is it one egg per day?
She lays the one egg per day. When she are have laid all the eggs, there are some hormone changes inside her body that makes the eiderdown shed off her chest. And the reason for that is because she must find a way for her body heat to reach the eggs. With the eiderdown, the insulation in between, she cannot heat the eggs.
Yeah, because ducks and birds have what's called a brood patch.
Right.
So that transfers the body heat from the parent onto the eggs to help regulate the temperature of the eggs. And if that eider was still on her brood patch, well, then the temperature wouldn't get through because it'd be keeping the heat in. But now what she wants to do is let the heat out. But she doesn't waste the eider down, does she?
No, she doesn't. She uses the eider down to surround the eggs, to keep the eggs comfortable and warm.
Because they nest in very exposed areas on the island like we saw today.
Yeah, you were freezing today.
Yeah, very cold. I survived.
Yeah.
And they have to survive that the entire time.
Yeah, they have to do that.
So how many eggs would she normally lay?
Normally 4 or 5 eggs. And sometimes we see many eggs in each nest, maybe up to 10. And the reason for that is usually that 2 eiders are using the same nest.
And is that common?
It's not common, but it happens.
And why would it happen? Are they sisters?
Maybe they are some have some relations.
Have they both mated with the same male, do you think? Is it possible?
It is possible, but I don't think so, because usually they have their own mates.
But you have definitely seen a situation where there are 2 females,
yes,
using the same nest.
Yeah.
So do they take turns incubating the eggs?
We have examples where we have very small area with lots of eiders. Sometimes there are maybe 3 or 4 that change. There are maybe 4 ducks that take care of one nest.
So the business of eiderdown in Iceland, so how many kilos are produced every year?
3,000 kilos.
And worldwide, how much?
About 4,000 kilos.
So who are the other fellas producing this stuff?
The eider duck is an Arctic bird, so it's Svalbard, Norway, Canada, Russia, maybe Greenland.
Does the government control the amount of eiderdown that's released onto the market every year, or do you just let out what you have?
We just let out what we have, and the only control is what the nature by itself control. Because sometimes we have it's cold, then we have sometimes less eiderdown. If we have not have enough food in the sea during the winter time, she is not prepared enough to come to land, so she maybe skip nesting that year. So it's only the nature who controls the quantity.
Good morning, bonjour.
So treasured is this valuable natural product, and so labour-intensive is the annual harvest. Depending on the size of your bed, eiderdown quilts can sell in some Irish outlets for as much as 15,000 euro.
A sample of an eider would probably cost a few thousand euro. But if you wanted to buy one, Derek, I can get you a ball of eider to hold in your hand. And you know what? If your eyes are closed, you won't even know it's there. No weight at all. It's incredible.
Eiderdown is the most celebrated and highly prized insulation material in the world. Almost impossibly light and soft, its exceptional heat retention properties have led to great demand and astronomical prices, as I discovered when I met Lisa Duffin in Bottom Drawer, a family-run linen and toweling concession in Brown Thomas.
They are the Rolls-Royce of duvets. They're fabulous. They take about 2 months to come in. They're literally made specially for you, and they're filled with pure eider with a pure silk casing. They are incredible, but they are a little bit expensive.
And how much would an eider down duvet set me back?
Well, it would be a big investment. One that would be like a winter weight, so very warm, almost too warm, gosh, for the weather we're having at the moment, would be about 14,000 to 15,000 euro.
Wow.
But if you bought one that was slightly lighter, that you could use maybe 9-10 months of the year, about a 6 or a 7 tog, that would be our best selling weight. It would cost about 7,500.
And how long would they last for?
At least 15, 20 years.
And you could turn it into a coat after that, presumably.
It doesn't really wear out. It would just stay, and it comes in a beautiful silk casing. It's stunning. The down from its chest is brown. So they put on a beautiful silk casing rather than your typical fine white cotton casing that you'd find on a goose down or a duck down.
Much of what has been traditionally called eiderdown in Ireland has been anything but. The word almost became a generic term for any feather-stuffed quilt. But not all feathers are created equal. The vast majority of the so-called eiderdowns in Irish homes are actually stuffed with a much cheaper domestic goose or mallard down, a byproduct of the massive Chinese poultry farming industry. These down feathers do themselves provide excellent insulation and at a much more affordable price. But true eider down from the breast of the female eider duck is more than twice as effective an insulator and far lighter to boot. Unlike other down feathers, its filaments cling together like Velcro, meaning that it is much more efficient at trapping and retaining warm air. For centuries, it was considered the preserve of the rich and powerful and became a status symbol and hallmark of supreme luxury. For example, the Titanic, which sank in 1912, had 800 eiderdown duvets on board to cater for the needs of its first-class passengers.
Derek, I want you to have a look at this jar full of eiderdown.
Mm-hmm. It's a very large jar, like you'd see in a sweet shop, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And it's full of very fluffy, very cozy, and very exclusive eiderdown. So if we open up this jar now, just let me put it down. You see, it's a very nice brown natural color. And once you take out a piece of the eiderdown, you'll see it sticks together, and that's one of the great attributes of the eiderdown. So it's very light and has lots of air pocket, which gives it a good insulation, which makes it so interesting but also so expensive.
Alexander Yella is sales director for Europe and North America with the family-run firm Hayfold Textile, one of the most successful and innovative producers of bedding in Europe. Established in Austria in 1907, the company is proud of its track record that goes back more than 100 years. Hayfold is well known for its unique innovations and first-class products of the highest quality, including eiderdown.
So once you open your hands now...
Yes, open my hands, yeah.
I want to give you an idea, you know, how light it actually feels. So we're going to make a small experiment. So please close your eyes now.
Okay.
And at one point, I might or might not put some eiderdown into your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to now tell me, do you have the eiderdown in your hand or not?
So just for the benefit of people listening at home, my eyes are closed. I'm holding the microphone with my left hand and I have my right hand open and my elbow resting on the table to give me some support. And at this point, I have no idea whether or not the eiderdown is actually resting on the palm of my hand. Now, it could be because my hand feels, dare I say it, just a little bit warmer. So I'm going to guess yes. Yes? No?
Yeah, if you open your eyes, you will see.
Yes, it is.
There's a nice big
lump of eiderdown in my hand. Honestly, that's amazing. There is no weight at all. I couldn't feel it resting on my hand. I couldn't feel you put it onto my hand. Only that my hand was beginning to get a little bit warmer.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest attributes of the eiderdown, that it's so light, but at the same time gives you such a great insulation. So it's just the right feeling for yourself. When you have a duvet over your body during the night,
mm-hmm.
you just want to have a little bit of weight. So you don't want to have nothing over you, because that gives you this nice, comfortable feeling, which you want to have during the night.
Mm-hmm.
And what's very important when you sleep at night is what you want to achieve is a dry, and warm climate beneath your blanket. And an eiderdown duvet will help you to achieve this.
How does it help me to achieve that?
It helps you to achieve the right kind of temperature level. So it keeps you warm. Mm-hmm. It also helps you to regulate the moisture beneath your duvet.
And you're telling me that something so light is going to keep me warm all night?
Absolutely. And that has to do also with the environment where the eiderdown is growing up. They exclusively come from Iceland. Mm-hmm. So the temperatures there are extreme as well. So the duck is specifically adapted to that climate. And the eiderdown is plucked in order to keep the eggs very cozy and very warm in this harsh climate of Iceland. So eiderdown has these specific characteristics of having this small air pocket, which allows you to insulate or gives you a really good insulation factor and then keeps you warm.
Now, why is it so expensive?
Because the amount of eiderdown is very limited. The availability on the market is very limited. There's only one country on Earth which produces the eiderdown, which is Iceland. And the annual production there typically fluctuates between 2,500 and 3,500 kilograms per year, approximately. So that has to do with the climate there, if it's a good year or a bad year. For Iceland, it's their eiderdown. It's an extremely rare commodity, and it's traded on a market value or on a daily or weekly market value. So depending on how much demand is in the market, the price is going up or is going down.
Oh, I see. Judging by what I've been told, it seems to be always up, never down. Eiderdown products traditionally are very expensive, so the market must be very good. So you don't know your supplier. You don't have one farmer who's going out harvesting the eiderdown for you that you know that you can shake the hand of and say, that's our producer.
We are actually in the lucky position and that we have direct contact to suppliers in the market. But nevertheless, we also have to pay the market price for it. The advantage which we have is we are sure that the eiderdown we are getting is of the premium quality, so that when a customer is buying an eiderdown duvet from us, he can be sure that it's only the best eiderdown which is available on the market.
How can I be sure if I buy a duvet, a quilt, a comfort or whatever you want to call it, that is an eiderdown product, that it has 100% eiderdown in it?
Well, you definitely have to look at the label. So the label, if the label states 100% eiderdown and you buy this product at one of the renowned shops, which are all around Ireland, the UK or Europe, then you can be sure that this is the case. However, it's like you know any other egg product which has a lot of value, and that there is the possibility of fraud. So that's why it's important, and that's why, for example, we as Havel have developed the Honest Down product range.
The Honest Down product range.
Exactly.
Okay, what's that?
The Honest Down product range is nothing else that we, as a family enterprise with 111 years of tradition, we guarantee with our name, with our experience, that what is put on our label is also in there. Because we want to avoid that any company is misleading the customer with not putting the right product into the duvet, which is actually labeled on the duvet.
So if it says Havel eiderdown, then it's eiderdown.
Absolutely.
And guaranteed. And do you ever feel guilty for taking this eider down from the ducks, away from their eggs?
No, absolutely not. Because they only harvested those nests once the chicks have left it. So it would just stay there and would be of no further use. So it's a natural symbiosis. It's a natural process for the farmers there to harvest them and to make something useful out of it. It's a natural product in the end, and that's what's important.
And how much of it would you take in every year? I suppose I'm really asking you is how many eiderdown quilts do you produce here at Havel every year?
It's hard to say. It always depends on the requirement of them of our customers around the globe. But there is a really nice number, which I'm not able to disclose.
No, you're saying with a smile on your face as well. But do you have many in stock?
No, they're all produced on demand. So we would work together with our partners around the globe, which talk to their customers. So customers typically have a small swatch, like a 40 by 40 centimeter sample, as mm-hmm. we would call them. So just in order to give the customer an idea, you know, about the feeling of the fabric, the feeling of the down, they can squeeze it and get an idea of what they're buying into, because obviously they buy a very exclusive product. Then it comes into play that duvets are all have different sizes all around the globe. Austrian duvets have a different size to a German duvets, not talking about the UK, Ireland or the US.
Well, you kind of got queen size, king size, super king size, super queen size, double, single.
Yeah, absolutely. And that just because it's named like that, the UK or the Irish standard might not be the same as the US standard. So even though it's a queen one, it might, you know, different sizes.
So everybody who has an eiderdown quilt, that comes from you at least, has a bespoke quilt.
Absolutely. It's handmade. There's still a lot of manual labor here in our factory in Austria, which is going into that. So we have very high qualified staff, which are not only producing the ticking or the fabric, but which are then also sewing the shells mm-hmm. and then using a machine in order to fill the duvet and then to close it up.
And does every duvet have a specific amount of eiderdown that goes into it? I mean, you know the way you can get different togs, whether it's summer or winter. Are you telling me that one size kind of fits all in this instance when it comes to eiderdown, or do you fill them with different amounts of eiderdown also?
Absolutely. That's part of the customization process. So we can, according to your requirements, according to your sleeping patterns or where you're situated, maybe you have, you know, you want it for your villa in Portugal or for your chalet in Norway, whatever. So you might want to have different kind of filling weights. So we have typically summer comforter, all year comforter, winter comforter, which have their different torque values. And depending on what you personally would like to have, like, you know, if you really freeze easily, then you might want to have a higher torque value. However, if you want to have it only very light and just to cover you, you can have a lighter torque value. And that's the advantage for us. We really can customize it to your requirements.
Do you have many customers in Ireland?
We have many customers in Ireland. We have a great distribution network all over the island, where we sell our standard products, down duvets, fiber duvets, mattress pads, and on demand, they're also happy to consult you and provide you with a quote for an eiderdown duvet.
Mm. And would you like to give me an idea of roughly how much an eiderdown double-sized duvet would cost me, let's say, for the summertime?
It would already cost several thousand euros.
Oh, wow.
There is something else about eider feathers that is highly noteworthy. Another unique property that sets them apart from other birds. Nile Hatch.
I think for me, probably the most remarkable thing about eiders are their feathers. Now, obviously, the eiderdown from the female is, you know, prized and it's very well known. But actually, there's something remarkable about the male's feathers as well, and particularly those lime green patches he has sort of the back of his head and around towards the sides of his neck. You hardly see them unless you're up close to the bird, and then you wouldn't really remark upon them. I mean, there's so many other things to look at on that bird. But the amazing thing about those feathers is that that green is produced by green pigment. And so what, people might think, but actually green pigment in birds' feathers is extremely rare. Virtually all of the birds in the world that have green plumage, if you think, for example, of parrots, green finches in our gardens, blue tits with that patch of green on the back and grey tits, they are green, but it's not produced by pigment. It's produced in those birds by microstructures in the surface of the feather that reflect certain wavelengths of light. What's happening is that a certain wavelength of light is bouncing off, hitting your eye, and your eye is registering that as green. But if you were to take a feather from a parrot or a greenfinch and then to whack it really hard with a hammer, what would happen is the green would disappear. It goes and becomes dark grey or black because the microstructures in the feather have been broken up. And that's because there's no true pigment there. It's because it does these microstructures. Now, the feathers on the neck of an eider are quite different. No matter what you do to those, even if you hit them or mistreat them, the green remains. And that's because it is true pigment locked into those feathers. Quite why eider have evolved that when virtually no other families of birds in the whole world have evolved that is a bit of a mystery. It's strange that they have this special power that most other birds don't have. You know, it's only a small part of their plumage. It's not like they're extensively green all over like a parrot or a greenfinch would be. The only other group of birds in the whole world that also have green pigment in their feathers are a group of birds called the turacos, which are found only in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa. And they also have green pigment in their feathers, which evolved independently. They're not related to eiders or indeed to ducks or waterfowl in any way. So they have actually chemically a completely different type of pigment in their feathers. Interestingly, the turacos also have red pigments in their feathers, which are rare in birds. But if you get a turaco's red feather and you put it in water, the red pigment actually washes out and leaves the feather white. That's really, really strange. That just doesn't happen in any other kind of bird. So when it comes to colours, in particular the colour green, the turacos and especially the eiders are really special, and certainly the only bird we have in Ireland that has true green pigment in its feathers.
As a species, the eider is doing fairly well. They tend to live in quite remote areas, away from the human pressures that now afflict so many other water birds. Also, because they dive deep to feed on bottom-dwelling mollusks and crustaceans, as opposed to surface-dwelling fish, they don't suffer to such a degree as other seabirds from the impacts that rampant commercial overfishing and pollution have had on marine ecosystems. A particularly famous colony of eiders lives on the Farne Islands in Northumberland, England. These birds were the subject of one of the first ever bird protection laws, established by St. Cuthbert in the year 676. He even encouraged the ducks to nest inside his church around the altar and placed them under his personal protection. It must have worked. Around 1,000 pairs still nest in St. Cuthbert's colony today, and locals still call them Cuddy's ducks. With or without saintly protection, female eiders are excellent, attentive mothers. Not alone do they pluck their own breast feathers to ensure a soft, warm nest lining for their eggs and chicks, they perform 100% of the egg incubation duties. Incubation of 4 to 6 eggs lasts for 25 to 26 days. And so attentive is the female that she won't eat at all for the entire duration. She also has a pretty special trick up her sleeve. If a predator, such as a fox, threatens the nest and chases the female away, as she flies up to escape, she deliberately defecates all over her eggs. It is thought that this is probably an attempt to make the eggs less palatable to the predator, in the hope that it will decide to give them a miss. Like other duck species, eider chicks are extremely advanced, or precocious, as an ornithologist might say, when they hatch out of their eggs. They can run and swim immediately, and their mother quickly leads them away from the nest and out to the relative safety of the sea.
The skerries population seems to be part of the greater trend that is documented now in the literature, that the birds first appeared in Innistrahul, and they've moved across the Donegal coast, around the Antrim coast, County Down coast, down the coast of Sligo, into Mayo, into Galway, and now they seem to be they're in the Skerries area, having also got to the Isle of Man and North Wales. So that sudden shift in the population that started in Innistrahul in 1917, I think, seems to be still going on. And I'm reading recently that some of the Scottish West Coast Scottish populations seem to be declining, and the Irish population seems to be increasing now. There's no theories as to why or how yet, but that's for future research.
Approximately 100 pairs of eider breed annually in Ireland, with the coasts of Sligo, Donegal and Antrim being particular strongholds. In winter, numbers swell as migrants from Scotland and Scandinavia join our resident flocks to feed. And the eider could be described as being locally common, as Richard Collins discovered when he met Sean Pierce in the coastal town of Skerries in North County Dublin.
Okay, Richard, great. We have the males displaying nicely over here. They're throwing the head back and giving that lovely classic call. Whoa, whoa. There's a lot more males and females at the moment around the islands here, so the females are getting quite a bit of attention. And male's lovely colour, that lovely green on the back of the head is one of those things that I'd really like to look at. But a fine, big, black and white, handsome duck, whereas the female, of course, is all brown coloured for camouflage purposes for sitting on the nest.
Of course, she's the prize, after all, you know, and they're flamboyant, they're gaudy, really, the males, demonstrating their affection. Of course, they don't stick with the female once she's on eggs now, do they?
Correct, no, they move off, yeah, more or less immediately, and not to be seen again until the following season.
And of course that's why she's all brown, so she's camouflaged, whereas you wouldn't want him around the nest. He'd attract attention from all the predators, would he?
He certainly was conspicuous, and sitting on the nest, he wouldn't help matters. So, you know, he's probably better off going to sea and taking attention away from the colony itself. Yeah.
Now, there's half a dozen of these fellas displaying to the few ducks that are among them. Are they competing? Are we looking at a competition here?
I would suspect so, given the level of energy from the various males I'm observing at the moment. Yes, I think so. You know, given the longevity of this colony, there's probably birds that are only just coming into breeding status as such, where they'd be older males that are more established. And I see a few immature males hanging around the edges and watching it carry on, who haven't a chance of breeding this year, but are learning the ropes, as it were.
I see, yes. Well, now, when do you suspect that they will be on eggs? I mean, what's the next phase? The courtship over. When does the marriage take place?
I generally would start looking for a nest the first week of May. That's generally peak time here, which is fairly, you know, it's fairly tight on most other parts of Ireland as well, in terms of those laying dates. You can get some in late April, but generally it's the first week of May.
And she sits then for, what, 3-4 weeks, something like that?
Yeah.
More, I suppose. Yeah, 4 weeks about, I suppose. And
sits quite tight, yeah. But, of course, as you know, Rubstar takes off that beautiful eider down and wraps the eggs if she has to leave the nest.
You're not tempted to do anything like that, I trust. But
well, the valuable commodity now.
It is indeed, yeah. But I don't think you get enough of that down here to keep a new industry afloat, would you?
No, you'd need quite a big farm of eider to make sure that would happen, yes.
So now the hatching occurs next. The little babies come out. And she, what, leads them off to the sea or something?
More or less runs the gauntlet then, yes. They have to get away from the nest as quickly as possible and then down to the sea, where they spend a lot of time in the shallows, just picking up small little bits of invertebrate life and even small starfish. I've seen them eating small crabs and that type of thing in and around the foreshore until they start to grow a little bit. But they're quite amazing. I mean, they're immediately, in terms of danger, they'll duck, they'll dive immediately, the mother will call, and, scatter themselves in amongst the weed and that, you know.
Well, the next phase is a bit odd. She suddenly decides she doesn't want to be a mother anymore, and she clears off, and she hands them over to a kind of auntie or a nurse who'll take charge of them and maybe two or three other broods and takes it over from there. Why on earth does she do a thing like that?
I can't really answer that question, but that's common in shell duck as well, and a few other species of the larger ducks, where they operate this crest system, you know, safety in numbers perhaps, and maybe the females, because of the effort they put into laying such a big clutch of eggs, are, you know, need to take a breeder and actually feed back up again and hand it over to non-breeding females. I think that would be a pretty, you know, pretty smart strategy. Mm.
And the daddies, of course, are totally useless. They don't assist at all. They hang around. Do you see them hanging around here in clubs or something like that?
You'll get them into a sort of mid-May, but then they generally disappear off the scene, which is probably best from the duckling's point of view, in that they're big and obvious and black and white. Although, having said that, I have seen them on the west coast, where you see the male with the females during the course of the breeding season as well. So, you know, it doesn't happen everywhere.
Now, the babies get bigger, and at what stage do you begin to notice the males from the females among the babies?
Oh, you're well into the second year before you can really start to
detect. You wouldn't even see anything? No sign at all?
No, the same brown plumage. And, of course, the male itself will change its plumage colour to resemble a female during the course of the summer months, when they all go flightless and they lose their flight feathers.
So they're a bit slow on the uptake. It's going to be a couple of years before they're breeding. Is that the...
The sub-adult male, certainly, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But they're quite long-lived ducks. They're on a longevity programme.
Yeah, but look at all the food they have here. What brings them here, by the way? Why skerries? What's great about skerries?
I can only suspect that, given the amount of reef shoals and sandbars here, that there's plenty of food within diving range, you know, easy diving range. There's four or five big mussel beds, which is one of their favourite prey items. And I've seen them eating starfish, crabs, so there seems to be plenty of food there for them.
So they dive down 3 metres or something like that in the extreme case. And what do they do? Eat the mussel completely, shell and all?
But they can certainly store it in the crop before they hit the surface, but I've never actually seen them with a mussel in the mouth as such. I know what they're feeding on, whereas I've seen them come up with starfish and I've seen them come up with a crab and gently pick it apart and that, you know. They're strong sea ducks, I like them.
You were almost one yourself.
I have to admit, I didn't have a favourite duck before making that programme, but if anybody ever asks me now, what's your favourite duck? I'm going to say the common eider duck. They really are beautiful and such magnificent creatures. And when you think of all the effort that goes into collecting the feathers to make our eiderdown quilts and our eiderdown pillows and our eiderdown jackets and whatever you're having yourself. Anyway, more details on the website as always, rte.ie/Moody. Now let's say hello to Terry Flanagan, who's in Dublin 15. Is it going to be a difficult morning for you, Terry? Have you got far to travel for the dawn chorus this morning?
Well, it's very easy for me, Derek. I'm broadcasting from home and I'm looking out the window at my hedge. I've got a hedge in the front garden, I've got a hedge in the back garden, and they're full of sparrows. Now, there's two different types of sparrows. There's hedge sparrows and there's house sparrows. And I know I'm going to be looking into my hedge, but we'll be talking about house sparrows, just like we did last Monday night on the programme. Now, some people will tell you that they're not very pretty birds. I've often heard them being referred to as LBJs, little brown jobbies. Personally, I think they're gorgeous. If you look at the male, he's got a beautiful grey head and he's got a black bib. And the females, just those lovely tan colours running into each other. Now, as I said, they live here in my hedge. And I suppose what I notice most about them is their distinctive call. That chirp, chirp, chirp. And they're always around. So yes, they can be really, really noisy birds, but to me, it's something I really cherish here in the garden. So in about an hour and a half, I'll be getting back to you from both my front garden and from my back garden here in West County, Dublin.